Chapter 14. The Mithraeum, the seat of the first reborn, the sanctuary of the Emperor of the Nine Houses, the bolt hole of God, the removing place of hallowed bones, and the ossuary of the steadfast. A space station hidden 40 billion light years from the ever-burning light of Dominicus, lit by thanagetic starlight, set in the midst of the circumstellar disk, an ancient jewel within so much dead gravel. Your new homestead was perched in the middle of an asteroid field, made up of concentric rings like a jeweler's toy. It consisted of habitation quarters, a donut ring of them on the outer edge, an inner ring of preparation rooms, a couple of laboratories, a reading room that was bigger than Dreaba, and a storage lazaret, where the foodstuffs were held frozen in time, unperishable. The other lictors complained that there was a strange aftertaste to thousand-year-old food, kept necromantically pure, but you couldn't taste it. There was also a water replenishment plant and incidental rooms. The chapel and God's rooms were at the centre. Everything else was for the dead. Arrayed were the bones of the dead and the bodies of the dead and the mummified heads of the dead and the retrieved flesh and skeleton arms of the dead, preserved immediately after they had been blown off the bodies of the previously living, and the ashes of the dead, and the hair of the dead, and the fingernails of the dead, and the folded skins of the dead, and the eyes of the dead, jarred in long and exquisite crystal containers filled with aldehydes. A lictor, sitting on the outside of the rocky ring that haloed the Mithraeum, would not think it hidden. They would see it as a screaming beacon of thanagy, a burning gyre of death, letters writ large in space, "Here is the graveyard, and we are the graves." Your first months of lictorhood passed in an echoing, vaulted set of sterile rooms specially allotted to you. They were neutrally coloured in whites and greys and blacks, scrupulously clean and relatively empty of bones. Unlike Ianthe's, they had never been used. They had been intended for a lictor who had never slept between their sheets or hung their clothes in the closets, or bathed their face in the water pump sink. To you, who had lived and breathed the aged dust of family members past, and worn their clothes and used their things, to get an unused set of rooms was new and enticing. You folded your clothes into drawers that had never seen clothes and kept the few small items in your bureau neat and organised, finding some measure of satisfaction in returning each night to such a place. You had never become content, and you were still helpless, but you might take chilly gratification in the small things. No servants here, in the bolt hole of the Necrolord Prime. Not a construct in sight. You all cooked your own food, or at least Mercy Morn cooked, and Augustine cooked, and even God himself cooked. You did not know about the other. Augustine was deigning to teach Ianthe, or at least make the attempt, but you did not see cookery in your future. You so rarely ate for pleasure that it was beyond imagining that you would become a normal human being who learnt how to make a sandwich. You were born of the ninth house, even if you had risen to the first, and you were happy with a cold collation. Ingredients could be taken from the storeroom and eaten as they were, in the broad steel kitchens so antique in their style, chrome-brushed countertops, wide square ovens, and a ring where a gaslit fire came out if you swiveled a dial. Often you could find the Emperor of the Nine Houses there, sitting at one of the plex counters and drinking from a chipped mug of hot coffee. He was wholly teacher now. His personal sitting room, a quietly appointed little space with a few chairs and a low table all comfortably faded with wear, had become a familiar sanctum. The rest of his private chambers remained a forbidden tomb. You'd traditionally been drawn to forbidden tombs, but this one repelled even your curiosity. The doors were always locked, and you nurtured no ambition to see them otherwise. He often summoned you for a theoretical lesson, or the cups of tea you still hated, but would have rather seen your skin flagellated off than say so, or simply to sit in silence. He had a trick of asking you to come over and talk, and then never actually talking, but sitting with you, watching the asteroids continue their graceful orbit around a thanogenic star. Once you found him with a sheaf of flimsy spread out over the low table, months-old reports, and he was embarrassed. God was embarrassed. "I still think about it," he confessed. "The 18,000, the radiation missiles. Augustine says thinking about it before we endure number 7 is folly. But the way I see it, if I fail with number 7, nothing matters. If we win, then this is the thing that matters most." It was always I when God ideated failure, as though the rest of you were not accountable for anything. You sat in your lustrous white robe, trying to appreciate the taste of black tea with milk in it, trying to look as though you might at any moment take the hard biscuit and place it in the tea as he did. The god of the unstilled mandible always gave you a biscuit, and you said, "Who did it, Lord?"
"B-O-E, I'm assuming," he said, a bit absently.
Then he paused at your confusion and said, "That's an acronym for a group of maniacs.
A cult who came to our attention maybe 5,000 years ago. We stumbled on them during one of our pushes into deep space. Stumbled. They'd been looking for us the whole time. They hate the Nine Houses."
You said, "I have never heard of them."
"You might have by another name, or simply as nameless insurgents. They prefer to present themselves as a kind of organic reaction, not a single coherent group. In fact, their existence depends on a secretive central organization that sends its agents to people we encounter outside the Nine Houses, to populated planets we're stewarding, and turns them against us from the shadows. But I know about them, and the Lictors know about them. They upped their game about 25 years before you were born. They'd gotten a demagogue, a charismatic leader who wasn't content to work behind the scenes. Hotspots flared up, but we took them down, cell by cell, bone by bone."
You remained silent, fingering the biscuit thoughtfully, developing the fiction that you might eat it sometime in the next myriad. Teacher quirked his eyebrows close together and looked at you with those oil-on-carbon eyes and said,
"I think they were behind Kitherea's coming to Canaan House. That's a damned sight more terrifying to me even than old nukes they have in storage somewhere."
You said, "Kitherea planned to lure you back to the Nine Houses, to attract a resurrection beast to kill you, I surmise."
"Lure is a strong word. I still think it was a crime of passion. I'm not saying she didn't have other reasons. It's just that I think some of them were heartbreakingly simple. I could have gotten through to her, given time," said God. "Time, it's always time. She was overworked and underloved. Whenever something needed doing, she'd always say, 'Me, I will.' And because she acted as though she had a leaven of selfishness to her, it was easy to say, 'Of course,' not recognizing how many times she'd said, 'I will,' not recognizing how she worked herself into the grave."
You said, "A seventh house flaw, a fatal longing for the picturesque."
"I understand the houses have crystallized into types," he said.
And he dipped his biscuit into his tea and ate it quickly before the sodden part could lose coherency and fall into the mug. You did not understand why anyone ate these biscuits or drank this tea.
"But they got to her, Harrow. I know they got her on side, though I'm damned if I know how they even got to be in the same room. BOE hates necromancers and necromancy. It's their fundamental tenet. And Kitherea? She would have been their bogeyman. A lictor. My hand. You were finding that if you held half a mouthful of tea in your mouth, it cooled. And when it was cool, it tasted more serene. Unfortunately, while you were still figuring this trick out, the Emperor of the Nine Houses leaned back and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, looked at you seriously and said, "Harrowhark, how many in your family? Your mother and father are dead, that much I know." You swallowed in haste. How he knew that. The secret you had broken yourself attempting to keep hidden from the rest of the houses, from the rest of your own house. You didn't know. But you looked at his kindly, open countenance, and you said with the refreshing candour that came from talking to God,
"One, since my parents ended their lives. I was the only child. My mother miscarried multiple times before I was born. I don't know how many."
His gaze didn't leave yours. "How were you born?"
"I don't understand."
You did understand.
"Harrowhark," he said, "you are a lictor. You generate too much light or too much darkness for me to look at you and make out any strong detail. But there are details I have surmised. You were awake during your first time in the river, and you performed necromancy. And believe me when I tell you, only one other person has ever done that their first time in. Keep in mind that she was an adult necromancer who went on to found the Sixth House. You have achieved incredible things. I understand your personality and your background, and I understand how they might turn natural talent into you. But it doesn't account for what I see in those moments when I can see you clearly. How did they get you?"
You put your cup of tea down, your biscuit still untouched, and you said, as though pushed after long interrogation,
"My parents gassed 54 infants, 81 children, and 65 teenagers, and harnessed that Thanagy bloom to conceive me. My mother used the resultant power to modify her ovum on a chromosomal level, so Thanagy ignition wouldn't compromise the embryo. She did this so I would be a necromancer."
The Emperor of the Nine Resurrections looked at you for a long time, and then he swore very quietly beneath his breath. You thought you understood, but then he said,
"This was all so different before we discovered the scientific principles."
"I am assured they had no previous research to go by. They came up with it themselves."
God said, a little bewildered,
"That's not quite what I mean. But to concentrate so much Thanagy into so precise a task, like using a nuclear detonation to power a sewing machine. The ovum ought to have been obliterated at a subatomic level. Do you understand what they did?"
"Intimately," you said. "They explained it to me when I was very young. I could draw the theorem mathematics if you gave me some flimsy."
"No, I don't mean mechanically. Conceptually. To all intents and purposes, your mother and father committed a type of resurrection," he said. "They did something nigh on impossible. I know, because I have committed the same act, and I know the price I had to pay. Phallogenetic modification of an embryo is difficult enough, but to achieve the same thing with Thanagy."
You gave a helpless half shrug. "My parents were not flesh magicians," you said. "But they were the greatest necromancers the Ninth House had yet produced."
"No doubt," said the Emperor. But Harrowhark, even as the product of two obvious geniuses, you are a walking miracle, a unique theorem, a natural wonder.
You looked at him, and you said, I have just told you that I am the product of my parents' genocide.
The Emperor set down his tea and finished off his biscuit, and did that terrible thing that he did on occasion. He reached over to touch your shoulder in that brief, tentative way, the lightest and swiftest of gestures, as though afraid that he might burn you. Your mother had guided your hands over bloating corpses. Your father had held down the corners of great tomes, and his sleeve had brushed your six-year-old fingers as he showed you how best to turn their pages. Both of them had pressed a rough rope made of coated fibre into your hands. You recalled the pressure from their palms, their attempts to be gentle. When the Emperor touched you, your body recalled, unbidden, each rare and terrible touch committed by your mother and father. God said, I will shepherd your dead 200. I will take on their burden to mourn and cherish in more ways than you'll understand right now. And I'll remember your parents, who did such a god-awful thing to my people and theirs. I will remember it until the universe contracts in on itself and wipes clean what they did, and makes blank such an indelible stain. I acknowledge to you and to infinity that I am the Emperor of the Nine Houses, the Necrolord Prime, and that their stain must be regarded as my stain. Consider it my crime, Harrowhark. I pledge myself to making it right. A red heat had begun at your exoskeleton's necklet, travelled up your throat, darkened your face beneath your paint until you felt as though you had been held too close to a stove. You said, Lord, you can't.
Teacher.
Teacher, have mercy on me. Please don't tell anyone. A child's plea. Nobody has to know. To God. For a moment he changed. He grew angry, and you thought it was at the rank foolishness, the irresponsibility of what you'd said. Those monstrous, unnatural eyes narrowed, and his mouth became hard as the stones and rocks that had made up the planetoid you'd later slaughter. For a moment you perceived a hint of his great immortal age, of an enormous distance between you, of an ignition too bright for you to conceive. You were an insect standing before a forest fire. You were a cell beholding a heart.
Harrowhark, nobody has the right to know, he said fiercely. Nobody has the right to blame you. Nobody can judge. What has happened, and there's no putting it back in the box. They wouldn't understand. They don't have to. I officially relieve you from living in fear. Nobody has to know.
That night in your bed, you did not weep. Your body tried and failed to produce tears. Afterward, God was more careful with you than ever. And he had been careful before. Sometimes you caught him glancing at you, as if he was trying to see something in the confines of your face. But whatever he was looking for, it was not what your parents had done. At the time, you swore that you would tell him about the tomb. You would find it within yourself to admit that also. You had never told anyone about the tomb, but you would tell him. You would tell him if he asked. No, that was equivocation. You would tell him of your own free will, and be glad of any punishment he saw fit to give you. Before you'd left him then, when your tea had cooled sufficiently that you were no longer required to drink it, you'd asked,
What does BOE stand for?
Blood of Eden, he'd said slowly.
Who is Eden?
Someone they left to die,
said God wearily. How sharper than the serpent's tooth, etc. Harrow, if you bother to remember anything from my ramblings, please remember this. Once you turn your back on something, you have no more right to act as though you own it.
At the time, that had made perfect sense to you.